You're listening to the Hog Sports Network Daily Podcast. Now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
Happy Thursday. I am your guest host, Christina Long. Your regular host, Matt Jones, will be back in the chair tomorrow, Friday, for our final show of the week. He needed a little break, and he's been doing a lot of baseball writing during his break. Even Matt's breaks, he's working on baseball, but that's what brings him joy. I'm joined in studio by Ethan Westerman, and later we'll have Anthony Christensen, our men's basketball reporter, come on to talk a little bit about Arkansas's win over Georgia last night. He'll get into some analysis of last night's game, but first, I want to talk about this game big picture with you, Ethan. It's hard to understate how much they needed this. Mm-hmm. I mean, we talked about it yesterday about how we've been saying that it's now or never for several games now, and they finally got it. And, you know, I think they showed some real improvement in some key areas. While I don't think this was, you know, I don't think this is a huge corner turned, but I do think getting over the hump of that first win was so vital, even to just them finishing out the season, because there is still so much left.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, said it yesterday, winning is the only cure of just bad vibes. And last night, not only that they got a win, but the way they had to battle being down and coming back, and I think it proved to them maybe something, which is important, because right now, like, you even saw how they opened the game, just flat. I think it's a lot for them, like, you have to, as a player, see yourself have success to build that confidence. Like, you can't just, like, magically get this confidence. You're going to all of a sudden start winning games. But whenever you see yourself battle back and put together a rally like that and come back and beat a team, it can do a lot for you moving forward. I mean, I look at this game against Oklahoma on Saturday now, and maybe at the start of this week, it was kind of like, it was almost like a who cares what's happening type of vibe. But it's like, oh, if they can get a win Saturday versus Oklahoma, things start to get a little bit more interesting entering that game at Kentucky. Not saying that they're, like, all of a sudden, that if they were to go 2-5, like, fixed their season or something.
But it's a lot better than going into Kentucky 0-7.
Absolutely.
It's a completely different feeling.
Absolutely. And you can't start a streak. You have to have win back-to-back games to start a streak. And I think that that's just, you have to start somewhere. I've said it, I feel like since they started, like, 0-3, I've been just preaching it. Like, you have, the only way to get out of this is stacking wins. Like, you stack losses, you have to stack wins. And that's why the response Saturday is going to be huge. Is this a type of victory that really propels them into another game against a team that you look at in the standings and you say, oh, this is a very beatable team in the SEC by SEC standards. Is this the type of win that can propel you into going into that game playing confident and playing like the team that, if you're Arkansas, you think that you are and that you have been, you just haven't been showing. So big win for them. I think that it also probably sets up, like, the fan base to show up on Saturday big time. I think that that's all it takes is one win to get people back, like, wanting to believe again and wanting to get on board. And you could just see, oh my goodness, the reaction of Adu Thiro after the buzzer went off, yeah, and the players. And I mean, Calipari even on the sideline,
a little dance. I was like, okay. It was really funny.
It was like all of them just, it felt like they exhaled or something. Like, just like, we gotta win. Like, we don't have to be hearing about winlessness anymore.
Right.
It's huge for their mental. I'm not over here saying, like, beating Georgia should be the highlight of your season. It should not. But the fact that they, like, at this point, it feels to me like the biggest, we've mentioned it was the biggest win other than Michigan, just, like, on paper. But
it was the first SEC win. They don't, I mean, who else? And they lost to Baylor and they lost to Illinois.
Yeah, like, Lipscomb is their third best win. But so I'm not saying it should be like the highlight of your season that you had to come back from down 15 and beat Georgia, but it was the type of win that just it felt like maybe more than just one win, because you just needed to get the monkey off your back. Like, it was, you had to get that one off your back of not having an SEC win under your belt, and they did it.
Yeah. You know what it reminds me of a little bit, and it's different circumstances, but the way we've talked about it now, just now, is it reminds me a little bit of how we talked about the Liberty Bowl,
mm-hmm,
where, you know, nobody is hanging their hat on Liberty Bowl champs, and nobody was, like, super excited about that game. But if you lose it, 6-7 going into the offseason, 6-7 feels so much worse than 7-6. And so that's why you have to win that game, even though people aren't thrilled to be there, even though the season didn't go how you wanted, even though, you know, nobody is going to be going into next season going, but hey, we won the Liberty Bowl. It still does matter, honestly, just for pride and for, you know, for vibes, honestly, like for how you carry into the offseason. Now, this is a different circumstance. It's not the offseason. It's still pretty early, but it's a similar situation where, like you said, say they beat Oklahoma and they're 2-5 going into Kentucky. It's not good. It's not what they wanted, but it is so much better than 0-7. And the feeling will be better. It will be, you know, the feeling among the fans is better. The feeling among the team is better. And that was something Calipari talked about quite a bit last night when he was speaking, was he was saying, you know, these kids are not robots. They're not computers. They know. They can feel it. They are trying. And he talked about how he said, if I'm hurting, they're really hurting. And if I'm tired, they're exhausted. And he said they kind of scaled some things back in practice. They were kind of, it sounded like they were kind of trying anything to kind of protect them from what this, the toll that this losing streak was starting to take. And so, like you said, Adu Thero's reaction spoke a lot to me, because obviously you're going to be hype after you win a game and after you, you know, punctuate it that way. But I was like, that's not a team that's given up or feels like the season is a wash, which I think is big, because I think even just us sitting in these chairs every day, it gets to be a grind discussing it or having to reflect on just continued losses. Being part of it has to be even worse. And, you know, Calipari talked about how he, you know, apologized to his wife, apologized to his athletic director, wanted to apologize to the fans for putting them through this. And while I don't think they're out of the woods, they're at least over the hump a little bit.
Yeah. And they get it's more like just I apologize you've had to go through this. Here's at least a buffer of relief for a second. Yes. Like, you don't have to feel the weight of, like, hearing about how bad the team is doing and stuff. And it is just such a, basketball is one of those crazy sports, in my opinion, because you can get so caught up in a winning streak or a losing streak to where things are so much either better than they actually are or so much worse than they actually are. And I'm not saying an 0-5 start didn't merit the type of reaction that it got. I mean, that was unprecedented for Arkansas.
I mean, for Calipari, it was first time since it was his worst start since the 80s. You know, like that had to be
coaching
crazy.
The Minutemen of Massachusetts. Yeah. I mean, but it is one of those things, like, you have to scale back a little bit, I think, and realize that there's so much basketball left to play. I'm not saying this team is going to figure it out and make a tournament run. Let's reserve that for...
We're not going to overreact. We're going to react. We're not going to overreact.
Yeah. Let's wait till March. But, I mean, I do think it is worth pointing out, like, Eric Musselman's last team that went to the NCAA tournament, the one that went to the Sweet 16 and lost to UConn, they started SEC play 1-5. Then they got a second win, started 2-5. I think that there is always time in a basketball schedule to get your team right and to have things going the way you want it to at the right time of the year. The problem is we live in a world where it's like kind of tournament or bust.
It really
and
is.
You cannot mess up your resume too much early in the season to where even your best at the end of the year doesn't get you in that conversation. So I do think the urgency is certainly there. Like, people are – it's definitely valid for people to be feeling the urgency of they got to fix this, because you can't get in too deep of a hole in SEC play. Because if you remember Eric Musselman's team that I just mentioned that went to the Sweet 16, people were sweating it out a little bit. I mean, people were projecting them as a tournament team, but it wasn't just like completely gold. Like, you didn't just book on it. It was still like, we need to see the name come across the TV. And so I think that it is one of those deals where, you know, there is time to turn it around, but you've got to – this has got to be the start. If this isn't the start, if you don't beat Oklahoma on Saturday, I think you've probably dug yourself too deep of a hole to climb out of. But they did what they needed to do, which is get on the right track at least for one night, and you can't start stacking wins until you get one of them. So we'll see what they do. I do think that this team seems to, like, finally have that, like, solid bit of adversity that I think a lot of teams need to face. Like, to maybe build the confidence up. Like, you cannot get much more down than I think that they were literally 24 hours before this game, whenever you're 0-5 in SEC play and your star freshman is out for probably the season. We haven't gotten an exact timetable, but it's been reported he's out for the season. And that's about as much adversity as I think you can face. And so they faced it. They got a win. Let's see if it builds up that confidence and it gets something moving down the road.
Yeah, I think that's what was most impressive to me, was that they were, not only that they won, but that they did it. They had to grit it out. They had to come back from down, 15?
Yep.
And then to do it when you were already, you know, you're already feeling terrible because, like you said, you've lost 5 in a row and your best player's out.
Yeah.
And you have to figure out what to do. You have a, you know, you have a short bench. You know you're all about to have to play a lot of minutes. You're exhausted. Trevin Brazil gets 4 fouls. You know, guys have to play even more minutes. You know, it's when you know you have depth issues, when you know, and you're hit with that, you know, bad news about Boogie Fland, that must be so hard to overcome, you know, as coaches, as players, and for them to actually do that. Now, they didn't play their best game. This was not a beautiful performance by any stretch, and Anthony and I will get into that a little bit more later, but I just think, you know, they have a lot of growing to do. They have to shoot the ball better. Mm-hmm. They have to make shots. But they also needed to rebound better. There they go. They needed to shoot better free throws. There they go. So, you know, they needed to see some things go right, and they finally did. It was fortunate that some things went wrong for Georgia, and it was, I think, fortunate that Georgia was who they had this week, and they had them at home. I think if they'd had a road game or if they'd had some of these other SEC teams, it might not have been the right match for the right time. It could have been really, really bad timing. And, you know, we talked yesterday on the show all about timing. And I think this was a good time for Georgia to be here, and this was really, really what they needed.
Yeah, I completely agree. It's like this little 2-game buffer in the schedule between they've got to take care of business against Oklahoma, but it feels like a little pocket of grace for this team of like getting this little stretch at home to maybe try and build up something instead of going on the road again and playing another. Like, life on the road is just so hard this year in the SEC. And speaking of home, like, the home crowd needed a win, I think. Like, it just was like, Bud Walton has been gloomy in the year of 2025. I cover both the men's and the women's team. I've been in all of them. And that was the first win since the turn of the new year inside that building. And had they not gotten that win, who knows? Like, because if they start 0-6, I'm not over here feeling great about them on Saturday. And the women don't play there again. I'm like, how long would we go into the year? The women don't play there again in January. We don't. How long into the year would we go without a win inside the home arena?
Yeah.
So,
how was it last night? Because I was not at the game, but yeah. I saw some pictures from during the game. The crowd didn't look great, but that's, you know, understandable. Yeah. With an 8 p.m. tip, but I read your story about Mike White. You know, you talked to Georgia coach Mike White about the atmosphere, and he talked a lot about the crowd, and he said it was really loud. And my first thought is, how much of that is crowd noise, and how much of that is how freaking loud they play the music in Bud Walton Arena?
Yeah.
At gymnastics the other night, it was crazy. It's so loud. Yeah. But so I was wondering, from, you know, for someone who was there, how was the crowd energy-wise, even though it was a smaller crowd?
Yeah. I described it as modest but loud in the story. Okay. And I do think it was... The student section, first time all year that I've just looked at them and been like, y'all did a great job. Like, y'all were into it. You were loud. That was the main source of, I think, noise in there, was in the student area. It was pretty full. Across the arena, it was, I'd say, I'm so bad at estimating.
I can never guess. Yeah.
It was like a little over halfway full the rest of this arena, I feel like. Like, lower bowl, pretty good. The further up you started to get, it was pretty sparse. But they were loud, though. That was the thing. It was like, and Mike White mentioned it. It's like, and Bud Walton, I don't know what it is about it, but like the decibel level can just get like on a run, it just gets really loud in there. And I think that they definitely fed off that energy. There was, you could see on the bench, like players the whole game, like they started going around, like trying to get the crowd into it. And once the crowd got fully into it and the team kept on putting their foot on the gas with a run, which they had a run against Florida that just got thwarted, like all of a sudden, and it got the crowd right back out of it. This time, it's like the team learned, it felt to me like they learned how to ride the momentum of their crowd and keep it going. It was big for them to do that. It was a good crowd. It was loud, especially for how late this game is. I mean, 8 p.m. tip is awful, especially whenever you're getting in the double bonus, like midway through the half. So you're just going to the free throw line, and I don't even want to know how long that game was. All I know is I walked out at like think 30 minutes past midnight, and they were setting up gymnastics.
Yeah.
As I was leaving.
Yeah. It's interesting you mentioned kind of the players hyping the crowd a little bit, because I think one of the most recent home games, Calipari talked about how he felt like there was, it was a loss, and he felt like there was one moment where, when DJ Wagner had kind of, he hit a shot and he turned to the crowd, and he was like, where is that energy? He was like, that's who we are and should be. And he felt like the team had been lacking that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think part of it is they're not hitting a lot of shots. But the other thing is, you know, he wanted to see them feed off each other, feed off the crowd, give to the crowd a little bit more. Mm-hmm. And so it's good to hear that they were able to do that a little bit, because I think that was a mission that Calipari had.
Yeah. The thought went through my head last night as far as, like, when they were going on the run, the crowd was getting into it. I was like, I think there's been a lot of – you get off to an 0-5 start, and people come up with all this – like, blame shifting is everywhere. Like, the crowd sucks, the team sucks, this sucks, that sucks. It just reminded me, I'm like, you put a good product on the court right now and you go on a run – the crowd will take care of itself. Like, the crowd can't...
Winning cures everything. It's like you said.
Yeah, the crowd can't get into something. Like, the crowd can't make a difference until you give it a reason to make a difference. Like, it's just natural for fans if you see your team down, like, in a pretty ugly style of basketball sometimes in these losses, how they've played out, where they're not hitting shots and they're just down by, like, a consistent, like, 10 to whatever point margin. It's just... it's hard for a crowd to get into it. So they gave him a reason last night. And I think that it also struck me, because I've been to all the home games except for Oakland. I was like, it felt to me like the first time at Bud Walton this season that Calipari and his staff got the Bud Walton, they got to experience, like, oh, what this can be like whenever it actually gets going in here. Florida, there were some pockets early. It got really loud. But then, like I said, the team didn't give him a real reason to, like, stay in it.
Right.
So... It was a good home environment.
Yeah. I want to tell you, you can get the latest breaking news on all Razorback sports from us at wholehogsports.com. We are the most in-depth source for all Arkansas sports. We have an award-winning team of reporters and photographers to bring you the most trusted Razorback news. So you can find all of that at wholehogsports.com. You can subscribe. You can also subscribe to Hogs Illustrated magazine there. We're working on our baseball preview issue. When we come back, Anthony Christensen, men's basketball writer, is going to join me to talk a little bit more of the actual basketball aspect of the game and how Arkansas performed and what they've got coming up. But first, a word from our sponsors.
Want to enjoy your life again? Burning, numbness, and general pain in your feet and legs might be keeping you from your daily activities. Neuropathy treatment can be effective to restoring your life. Come see what we can do at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Uptown Rogers. We can treat your neuropathy pain and get you back in the game of life. Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute is located at 5102 West Pauline Whitaker Parkway in Uptown Rogers.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design, with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Welcome back. We're here with men's basketball writer Anthony Christensen to talk a little bit more analysis of last night's win. It's exciting to actually get to talk about a win for the first time in a few weeks. It makes our lives a little easier. But before we get to that, I want to tell you about our friends at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute. They are your source for holistic wellness and your healthy lifestyle changes. Located in Uptown Rogers, the staff at Enhanced Healthcare will target your specific health plan for wellness, from neuropathy treatment, primary care, weight loss, and more. You can count on the experts at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Rogers. Anthony was at the game last night. I was watching from my couch. But, you know, Anthony, I want to talk to you about how they were able to get this win. And did you feel like this was more them winning or more Georgia losing? Because I feel like a lot of the comments I've seen from people is, you know, they kind of escaped with this one. I talked on radio this morning about how I did feel like they showed some important improvement. I didn't feel like it was terribly fluky, but I also think a lot had to go wrong for Georgia to win.
Oh yeah, Georgia did everything it could to lose this game. That being said, I mean, you get the win, and frankly, like you mentioned, they did do some things better, mainly physicality. I mean, that's the thing that they've struggled with a lot in conference play. Just, they've been the less physical team in every game except for that one last night. I mean, you get to the free throw line 34 times. Free throw shooting has been a problem for them too. And they hit 29 of their 34 shots. They out-rebound Georgia by 10, including 18 offensive rebounds. So they get, you know, however many more, I think it was 12 more field goal attempts than Georgia got. I mean, those are just ostensibly positive things. Adu Thiro had a really nice game, I thought. He was really the only guy who was, you know, efficient on high volume. And then Carter Knox didn't have, you know, a great shooting game from the field.
Nobody really did.
Yeah, Carter Knox went 1 of 5 from the field, but then he went 11 of 13 from the free throw line. So you could definitely tell that they were kind of emphasizing to him, like, hey, you need to get inside, get to the basket, and, you know, just kind of see what happens. He did a really good job of initiating contact and taking that. He had a big and one, if I'm not mistaken. And then obviously, defensively, I mean, they've had better defensive games. I mean, Georgia did end up shooting 43% from the field, but in the second half, Georgia only scored 27 points, as opposed to 38 in the first. So there's a lot of improvements for sure. But yeah, a win's a win.
Yeah, exactly. I think they just needed this. And I think the idea is hopefully this sparks something and maybe they can take something from this. But, you know, Adu Thiro was so much the story of this because of that final sequence. Mm-hmm. But I mean, who, you mentioned Carter Knox, but who else do you feel like was a difference maker here? And, or where else, I guess, did you see improvement or whether it was in how they played or how they were used?
Yeah, I thought Trevin Brazil had a nice night, yeah. Even though he only played 11 minutes. 7 points, 2 of 3 from the field, hit a three. He was aggressive, maybe too aggressive at points, just because, I mean, he did end up with 4 fouls. That's why he only ended up playing 11 minutes. But I thought they got some good minutes out of him. It was interesting to see, you know, the point guard play, just because obviously with Boogie Fland out, you know, they need somebody to step up into that role. And, you know,
you sound like John Calipari.
I mean, 6 assists on 18 made field goals isn't, you know, an ideal number, but you get that. I thought DJ Wagner showed some flashes. John L. Davis, he was more aggressive than we've seen him.
Yeah, better than it's been, but not great.
He didn't have a great shooting night, but he was more aggressive. He got to the basket, had 2 assists, 4 rebounds. So that, I mean, you want him to be aggressive. That's kind of what he did at Florida Atlantic, that kind of let him, I guess, be the guy he was. So maybe he grows into that role, since he just hasn't really been, you know, the guy to take a lot of the shots so far this season. But yeah, the point guard play is an interesting spot,
right?
Because you need you miss Boogie Fland's creativity.
For sure. Yeah.
And only getting 6 assists on 18 made field goals probably isn't going to win you a ton of games.
Right.
But I mean, you escape with a win in this one, and, you know, maybe playing like that, or I guess murkying the waters, if you will. Maybe that's the way they win games, especially games like that. So yeah.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about the guard play, because it was such a big question with Boogie Fland out. And, you know, Ethan and I talked yesterday about how there's no world in which you're okay with or glad that Boogie Fland is out. But,
no.
You know, there was a lot of talk before the game about, okay, does this jumpstart something for them, especially for John L. Davis? Just, I guess, what else did you see from the point guard play from the guys that did kind of absorb those minutes? And how do you think it's going to go with this kind of by committee situation?
I still think it's going to be DJ Wagner being that guy who takes on most of that role, just because, I mean, he has the experience of doing that at Kentucky. Where he obviously was the starting point guard last year. But I thought it was interesting seeing Billy Richmond, you know, be that ball handler at points, going up the floor. Didn't get any assists, only had one turnover. I didn't think he did anything necessarily poorly. He only got one field goal attempt, which you obviously want more from a guy bringing the ball up the floor than that. But I've always kind of been enamored by the by the Billy Richmond point guard project.
Yeah.
Because it is interesting. I don't know that it's where I would put him, but they obviously have the confidence in him to have that role. And I mean, he's shown at different points of the season that he can do that. I think there were different points in the non-conference, you know, slate that he showed that he can be a ball handler. And there were different points last night that, you know, you could see it. But I think I was a little surprised that they didn't have John L. Davis bring the ball up the floor more than they did, just because that's something he didn't do a ton of at Florida Atlantic.
Right.
He was more of an off-ball guy there, but he's capable of doing that. So I wouldn't be stunned if you see more of, you know, John L. being the guy who brings the ball up the floor as the season progresses. You know, if Boogie Flan can't return, which if you John Rothstein reported he's out for the season, which we didn't get to, you know, ask and confirm that yesterday. But yeah, I would expect to see John L. Davis maybe get some more run at the point guard spot, but I think that's DJ Wagner's spot for sure.
Yeah, it was interesting hearing Calipari say that he revisited the FAU game film on John L. Davis to see, like, am I insane? Am I using him drastically differently than he was used there? And the conclusion he reached was no. And, you know, you mentioned that Davis had a little bit of a better night. You know, still not a great shooting night, but he didn't seem to be a liability the way he had been at times in some of these other games. And that goes back to something that Calipari also said, which was he said everybody helped us, nobody killed us, which was something that I feel like after every game, after all of these losses, he had mentioned we don't have room for one guy to have a terrible night because we can't replace him with anybody. It's really what it is.
Yeah.
And so it felt like this was the first time that even though, you know, like you said, it was not a good shooting night for the team or for a ton of individuals either. A lot of guys were off in that department. It didn't feel like there was one area, like nobody was a liability.
Absolutely agree with that. Like you look at, I mean, a guy like, I think we mentioned Trevin Brazil. He obviously had his night. He was aggressive. Four fouls is not great, but he was aggressive. He got some rebounds. He did some good things. And then you look at, you know, Zvonimir Ivicic didn't play a ton, but I mean, he hit the three at the end of the first half that, you know, I don't want to say gave them momentum, but I mean, that's a huge shot.
It jump-started something. Yeah, for sure.
But then, yeah, it's an interesting one just because, I mean, that's a Georgia team that is good. You know, they cracked the AP top 25 for the first time in 14 years the other week. Obviously, are no longer there.
Promptly lost two games. I guess now three after that.
But it's an important win. I honestly kind of forgot the question, but yeah.
It was more of a discussion than a question.
Yes.
I think here's a question. I think, you know, I know you guys will, I'm sure, talk more about Oklahoma tomorrow, but, you know, going into this game this weekend, Oklahoma seems to be a bigger challenge. Are they in the top 25? Are they ranked?
No.
They're not? Okay.
No,
were. Okay. That's why I thought they were ranked. So, I mean, maybe a similar level to Georgia. You know, different teams for sure, but a similar level, another good opportunity, one that you aren't necessarily going to pencil in as a loss. It was something I talked about on radio this morning was, you know, they opened the schedule, the SEC slate, with such difficult teams that it was already going to be hard for them to win. And then when you saw how they were playing, now you're getting some teams where it's like, okay, this could be a little bit more winnable, right? And so I guess how do you see this Oklahoma game? Just early, I know you guys will break it down some more probably tomorrow on the show, but just early look at this game, especially given what we saw yesterday. How do you see that matchup, and what else does Arkansas need to do? I guess maybe the obvious answer to that is shoot the ball.
Don't shoot 31% from the field.
But
Oklahoma is a team that, you know, can play in a couple different ways. They can murky the water just kind of like Arkansas did last night, but they can also get out and win in a shootout. They did that against Michigan kind of in the same fashion Arkansas did. Jeremiah Fears is awesome for anybody who hasn't watched him. He's like 17 years old and he's going to get drafted after this year. I'd be stunned if he didn't go into the draft. But you know, you did say obviously these are games that, especially these two, that Arkansas kind of needs.
At home, too. I mean, you have to get these home wins where you can.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, Oklahoma was at Georgia, had them down pretty good, ended up losing that game by 10 points. But, you know, Oklahoma's a team that is capable. They've got an SEC win. Granted, it was at home against South Carolina, who stinks, in SEC terms. You know, a 20-point win in the SEC isn't anything to scoff at. But you know, Oklahoma's a good team. You know, they play a fast pace on offense, so Arkansas is probably going to try to, you know, slow that down kind of a little bit like they did against Georgia. Which, you know, if it works, it works. You know, murky the waters, like we've said.
it's the theme of the day.
Yeah. So yeah, that's kind of like the brief overview. I like Porter Moser a lot as a coach, even though, you know, maybe his seat isn't necessarily cold there at Oklahoma. But I mean, you don't go undefeated in non-conference play for as a fluke. I mean, they beat some good teams, obviously Michigan, Arizona, Louisville, who's on fire.
Yeah.
So it'll be a tough game, but it's one that, you know, they probably need, mm-hmm. if they're going to, you know, turn this around and get to the tournament.
Yeah. It's nice that it's here because they've been playing them in Tulsa for the last 2 years, and it got to be kind of a fun, not full on a rivalry, but it got to be kind of a fun game, I think, with Muss and Moser, and Muss getting tossed at least once, maybe a couple times. I don't remember, but you know,
getting tossed.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Shocker of the year, right? When would that ever happen? But no, I think, you know, it's nice that it'll be here. I think that'll be a good home game for them. I know attendance last night was a little tough, but 8 p.m. on a Wednesday, I you know.
You can see it in my eyes.
exactly.
The bags under my eyes are remarkable.
It was a long game, too.
Yeah. When you get
favors.
When you get 700 free throws in the game, it's gonna take a while. I didn't leave Bud Walton until well after midnight.
Yeah. You didn't get locked in, though. That's good.
I did not get locked in. I've been locked into a couple different places. Bud Walton, not one of them yet.
Well, there was the soccer, your injury getting out of the soccer
yes,
stadium,
I,
crawling
I don't
under
think,
a fence.
I don't think I've mentioned this on the podcast. It was after the NCAA.
I think it's the first
NCAA women's soccer tournament game at Razorback Field. I took, frankly, too long writing my story. I'll admit that. But the gate was locked. So I'm still skinny enough, I guess. I work out. But I noticed that there's like a pretty sizable gap under one of the fences. So I'm like, okay, I'll just scoot under there. Yeah, I could fit. I could fit. And I did pretty comfortably. But I sat up too soon and I cut the hell out of like the right side of my head, gushing blood. It was all over.
You came to football the next day and you were like, yeah, I have this head. Look at my head wound. it was crazy.
And it was like, I texted my mother, who's a nurse, and I was like, should I go to the doctor for this? Should I get stitches? And she's like, no, baby.
If the nurse said it was fine, then it's fine. I was worried about you. I'm glad that she said it was okay, because I was worried when you came the next day and I was like, you didn't get this like taped up. But I mean, with basketball, you're never going to have to go under a fence. So there's at least...
You wouldn't think
safe.
So.
You're safe from fences.
Like, I've been locked in a lot. I've been locked in a lot of places. I've climbed fences to get out. I've crawled under fences. I've injured my head, but you know what? I'm still alive.
You've made it this far.
Yeah.
Well, that's our men's basketball talk for the day. When we come back, Ethan Westerman will be back, and we'll talk a little bit of women's basketball, about kind of what their struggles have been and what they've got coming up on the slate.
Want to enjoy your life again? Burning, numbness, and general pain in your feet and legs might be keeping you from your daily activities. Neuropathy treatment can be effective to restoring your life. Come see what we can do at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Uptown Rogers. We can treat your neuropathy pain and get you back in the game of life. Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute is located at 5102 West Pauline Whitaker Parkway in Uptown Rogers.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over 4 decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design, with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are Design.
Welcome back. I'm joined again by Ethan Westerman here in our studio. We're going to talk a little bit of women's basketball. They've got a game tonight against Vanderbilt at 6:30. They're on the road. But first, I want to tell you about our friends at Bentonville Glass. They've been serving their community since 1971, and they are committed, professional, and versatile. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas, if you're looking for skilled craftsmanship, you can look no further than Bentonville Glass for all of your glass market needs with the highest quality products. You can see them at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at bentonvilleglass.com. Ethan, game tonight, Vanderbilt, and then they're on the road again at Kentucky, who is ranked 11th right now. They're at there on Sunday. it's been a tough go for the women's basketball team. You know, we've talked before about how they got an SEC win before the men did when they got that road win at Auburn. It was kind of, I feel like, a similar situation where there was maybe a little bit of some luck involved. There were some free throws that yeah. got them that win. But, you know, it's been a hard season for them. Do you see any opportunity at Vanderbilt or here in the next couple of weeks? I don't think at ranked Kentucky presents a good opportunity for them. But where do you see them having a good shot to get something good going?
Yeah, well, this Vanderbilt team they're playing should probably be ranked, in my opinion. I mean, they've been, you check the metrics and they're top 25 in almost every metric, like other than, you know, the AP poll. So this is I feel like an equally tough challenge tonight against Vanderbilt. It's this two game road stretch they have it's a tough one. And the thing is, they have not played well against ranked teams this year. They've lost all their SEC losses have been by at least 30 points, and they've all been to ranked teams. So it's hard to, like, you know, we speak on the strength of the men's, the SEC on the men's side. The women's side, I'd say the bottom is a lot weaker than the SEC's men's bottom, but the top is so much stronger. Just like the top 6, 7, 8 teams are like, could beat anybody in the nation. Like, it's just so good, that the top of the league. And Arkansas has kind of fallen victim to playing a lot of those early. But if you look at their schedule, it really does ease up a little bit as far as SEC terms of like opportunities to win. I look at, they have a home and away against Texas A&M. On the women's side, you only get one team that you play in the SEC that you play twice. They drew Texas A&M. That's a great team to draw in the league because they're kind of right there with Arkansas near the bottom. They have a game versus Missouri. They've had Missouri's number since before COVID. That's an opportunity. Missouri still hasn't won a league game. They have a game at Georgia. Georgia's not very good on the women's side this year. A home game versus Florida. A good Florida team, but beatable. I think that there's some opportunities for them to get more wins. It's just, for them, it's we just talked earlier in the show about how for the men's team, it's about building confidence. And for the women, it's like, how do you not just get it torn down early in this? Like, you go through this gauntlet at the beginning of SEC play where you're playing almost all the ranked teams. They have only two more after this week left on their schedule. But they've already played.
4 out of 5 of their first SEC opponents were all ranked, it looks like.
Yeah, and I mean, it's teams that could 100% like go deep in the NCAA tournament. So they've played some really hard teams, and they played UCLA in non-conference too on the road, and that's a top 5 UCLA team. And they scrimmaged TCU in a preseason exhibition, which is a top 10 team. So they've played like almost like either half or over half of the top 10 by the end of the year, which that's just, for a team that's young and trying to like figure things out, that is such a like hard thing to do. It reminds me of whenever you're a little kid and you go out in the yard and you play your older sibling and stuff and just get beat like a drum because you're younger and worse. But sometimes it's those lessons and those experiences that you see what it did for you a couple years down the road whenever you're playing somebody maybe your own age, your own size, but you remember, oh, what that was like to go through whenever we were the underdog. So it's one of those that you might not see much reward for this team this year against their schedule. Maybe they'll pick off another team kind of close to them in the standings, but maybe a few years down the road some of these players look back like, oh, you remember whenever we got beat by 34 back to back by LSU and Texas, we got beat by 49 at UCLA. I mean, yeah. It's one of those things, you go through it, you breathe and live to see another day. And just, I think with this team, it's right now just, you don't even have to think about NCAA tournament, like right. The pressure of being on the bubble or stuff. It's just, how can you go out and play better today than we did the last time?
Yeah, it's really more about growth and just stacking even just improvements, even mm-hmm. if it's not wins, because of the way the schedule has been. And, you know, it's what you said about the SEC, about how the bottom is not as good as it is on the men's side. I think that's true. You know, the top of women's basketball nationwide is so far above the middle. It feels like there's such a steep cliff mm-hmm. between the top few programs and the middle ones, the ones that are pretty good. And, you know, even, I mean, how much did South Carolina beat Texas by a week or two
they
ago?
They beat them bad.
I mean, they beat them so bad. And, you know, South Carolina's at the top. Texas was ranked, what, 4 or 5 at the time?
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it's crazy how high the top of the sport is and how hard it is when you're lower to put up any kind of a fight against some of those teams. Yeah. You know, South Carolina specifically is a juggernaut and has been for so long. Arkansas has them in a few weeks. They've got February 20th, so they've got a while before they have to have to deal with that. But I mean, I remember a couple of years ago when South Carolina was here and set a program record for rebounding margin right against Arkansas because they were just so much bigger.
Yeah.
And sometimes some of these games have reminded me of that a little bit.
Yeah. And it's like in the men's side, if the number, let's say the number 17 ranked team upsets number one, you're surprised, but you're not like, oh, the craziest. On the women's side, if a team ranked near number 20 knocks off top dog South Carolina, or not, it's like a big deal.
South Carolina specifically, if anybody beats them, it's a huge deal.
Exactly.
And, but even those top, you know, four or five teams, you know, it's like a Texas, a USC, a UConn. It's so hard, it feels like, for other teams to break through. Yeah. I mean, we talked the other day about softball, about how it's going to be harder for a team like Arkansas to break through with Oklahoma and Texas in the league. And, you know, that's different. There's not the same level, you know, there's not the same disparity in that sport. But it's just, women's basketball has always been interesting to me because of how high the high is.
You nailed it as far as like the middle. There's a huge gap between the middle and the top even. And then you just go to think a team like Arkansas that's at the bottom of the SEC. I mean, that gap is even bigger. So the team that I, one thing I like about them, they didn't do this against Alabama, so throw this away, but before then, at least for the whole game, there were pockets. This team has played really hard even when they're down big, and just
that's
kind
true.
Of like they've been out there, like, you know, they're still giving it their all. There were pockets against Alabama. I'm not willing to say that was the case at all, but in other games I've been like, okay, y'all are still battling even though you're getting beat bad. So we'll see what they do tonight at Vandy. Vandy's a good team. They've got the second leading scorer in the SEC behind Izzy, who plays for Arkansas. And then they have the fourth leading scorer in the SEC. Michaela Blake's a freshman that was a five-star, and kind of she feels like the type of player that, like, just signifies that program's turning around, that they got a five-star to commit there, and she's killing it. So tough matchup. Vanderbilt's the type of team that they don't care what your style of play is, they're going to make you play theirs. So we'll see if Arkansas can survive that.
Yeah, between that and then, like we said, that ranked matchup at Kentucky, it's tough sledding for them. But after this, they maybe get a little bit of a break, and maybe they can start to put together some improvement. Like you said, just try each game to show some growth, to do something a little bit better.
I think a good goal for them right now is pick up another SEC win or two and win a game at the SEC tournament, or something that you can just kind of build off going into the next year, that you won a SEC tournament game, because they'll get pitted up in the first game at the tournament. If they make that one game in the SEC women's side, that you have the one that before everything else starts, kind of between the bottom two teams, just to get in the bracket. So
exactly.
We'll see.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today for an all-basketball edition of the podcast. It was good to talk about a win. We'll see what the women's team can do tonight. And Matt Jones, your regular host, will be back in the chair tomorrow to talk all things Razorback sports, as always. We appreciate you joining us.